Hey, this is Cleveland Brown, and you're listening to the About Last Night podcast. I guess your TV must be broken. Haha, just kidding. Actually, I'm not kidding. You're bored.
Hey guys, Adam Ray for the About Last Night podcast. Happy Monday! What a weekend in Spokane. Holy shit. Spokane Comedy Club. Shout out to everyone. The staff, the comics, the city. You guys rule. I cannot wait to go back. It's a world-class club, and sold a couple shows out. Just in a nice groove with my hour, man. The shows were so fun, so different. So many new things happened that I can't wait to bring to all my shows coming up, which are a lot. I'll be in Dallas January 31st through February 2nd at Hyenas Comedy Club. I'll be at Comedy Works downtown February 20th. February 20th through the 22nd in Denver, Colorado. I'll be at the Punchline in San Fran February 27th through March 2nd. And then Salem, Oregon, just added. Capital City Theater in downtown Salem, Oregon, March 8th and 9th. All those tickets at AdamRayComedy.com. This weekend, Brad Williams is going to be at the Copper Blues Live in Phoenix, Arizona, January 24th, and then January 25th through 27th at Tempe Improv. Get your tickets at BradWilliamsComedy.com. Today's episode is a fun fucking episode. A guy who has done it all, seen it all. He's a great comic. He opens for Jim Brewer and Metallica. He's a great dad. He was in the record label business. He's friends with rock stars. He's just got so much fun shit to talk about, and we cover a lot in this hour-plus episode. It's the one and only Joe Sib, making his ALN debut. You're really going to enjoy this episode. Joe grew up in NorCal. His folks split, was in the skater culture, got into magic as a kid, which got him into stand-up, which is an insane path, but he did it, and now he's crushing stand-up, man, putting a lot of work. I was one of the first dudes that met him at the Laugh Factory. He even mentions it in the pod, and he's stuck with it, man. He's gotten real funny, so enjoy the hell out of this episode. Follow Joe at Joe Sib on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Adam Ray Comedy, at Funny Brad, at ALN Podcast. Of course, aboutlastnightpodcast.com for past and present episodes and your ALN merch. We got beanies and sweats and shirts. That shit is comfy as fuck. I saw a lot of beanies at Spokane Comedy Club this weekend, which was dope. Shop AdamRay.com for all your Adam Ray merch. I got a ton of new shit coming. Mugs, pins, and Adam Ray beanies. But I got some dope-ass hoodies and hats and shirts all at ShopAdamRay.com. Tour dates again on AdamRayComedy.com and BradWilliamsComedy.com. Give us a 5-star rating on iTunes and comment on the iTunes page. That helps us climb the charts. Make sure you're subscribed on Stitcher, Spotify, SoundCloud, iTunes, and watching the show on YouTube. So many great apps coming up. We're recording the Chainsmokers this week. Marcellus Wiley, Brian Friedman, who used to be Britney Spears and NSYNC's choreographer, who choreographed Brad and I for the Funny Dance Show, which will be on E! This spring. So make sure you are subscribed, because we got a lot of fun coming at you in 2019, baby. Now that we got the tour dates, Twitter handles, and merch info out of the way, sit back, relax, and enjoy a brand new episode of the About Last Night podcast with the very funny Joe Sib.
Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and listen to our dope podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day, so come on and treat yourself right. It's about last night.
And then this tank comes out and like transforms into a dinosaur.
Yeah.
And then the dinosaur.
It's always a tank and a dinosaur. What are the two like most popular monster truck mascots?
Ooh, mascots.
You know what I'm saying? Like when you go to one.
What's paint on the side? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like there's all.
Oh, paint on the side.
Well, I mean, like, isn't that? Are you mean the mascot that's actually running around in the venue?
Also, a great question. Also, didn't know there was that in the show. I'm talking about if you're going and you're bringing your kid or dwarf and you're going, hey. This is your first time, but this isn't your first time.
No, well, that was my first time at a monster truck rally.
It was?
Yeah.
I been to one before you?
I don't know.
That's a wrestling. I put that in the wrestling category.
Yeah. I've never even gone. I've wanted to.
Get the fuck out of here.
And I have a kid. I mean, I have a kid that I should have taken.
You hear the ads. They're the greatest ads in the world. They go, Sunday, Sunday, Sunday. You know, it's Bigfoot. He's going to be crushing cars. We got Megasaurus.
We've got Martha Stewart and God. I mean, like, the names of monster trucks are comparable to the silly names that strippers give themselves.
Well, Gravedigger is a monster truck. I don't know if I want to see Gravedigger the stripper.
Well, how dare you? She's trying to earn a living so she can support her children.
Yeah. I don't know if I want to see Bigfoot the stripper.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know if I'm giving loose.
All right, you guys are not invited to my Bigfoot bachelor party.
Let's see, there was Tiger Shark. I would see Tiger Shark the stripper.
It sounds sketch.
That could be fun for me.
Yeah.
If you're inviting someone who's never been, what are you preparing them for? Like, what are you saying? Like, oh, I can't wait for you to see this.
I mean, it's giant.
This turn into this.
It's giant trucks crushing cars. I mean,
beer. Is there beer? Are we drinking beers?
Oh God,
there's
yes.
beers. And then there was a tank that came out. It would transform into a dinosaur that would pick up a car and with its claws rip it in half.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm in.
I don't need to see it on Sunday. I want that on a Wednesday. I want it on a Thursday morning. I want monster truck rally sober 10 a.m.
And the best part was that you'd go and I was there just with a friend, but then you'd see all the dads and their kids, and then you see these kids, like, when these monster trucks come out,
losing their minds.
Oh my God. Yeah. Like, basically, this would be the equivalent, Adam, if Ken Griffey Jr. and Sean Kemp like called you up and said, "Hey, we're gonna
play some badminton."
Yeah, we're gonna be playing some badminton at the Playboy Mansion. You'd be like, "Wow, that's the greatest thing."
Yeah.
That could ever happen.
Yeah, I would go.
Yeah,
and not for the Playboy portion.
No. it could be Sean Kemp and Ken Griffey playing badminton.
In fact, they would not allow probably women around there because they're like afraid that. And then I will alley-oop this Sean Kemp kid joke to you because I know it's on the tip of your tongue.
I mean, come on.
I can't make it because I had his number in my phone for a little bit when I met him. And then he said he was going to come to my shows. And then all of a sudden just a few exchanges and then all of a sudden just nothing. And I was like, oh.
You lost him.
Yeah,
I lost Sean Kemp.
Where you get?
I was gonna say, give me your celeb. Where you're like, all right, new friendship, and then 2 days later,
you know what I call this? You know what I call that? It was when, because there's been times. I think one time I might have scared John Mulaney. You know, like, I'm a huge John Mulaney fan, and we were on what was the festival that they did? Oddball.
Yeah.
Yes. And I got to be on the side stage.
Nice.
Like, while people were parking their cars. So that was pretty rad. But Big J was hosting it. And he was super Oakerson. Cool.
Yeah.
Like, great. I'd never met him. And he was like, "Dude, hey, bro, you want a cider?" I'm like, okay. And I'm drinking cider with him. And he was smoking and he had the gloves on. It was everything you wanted. And and he was super cool. And then I knew Mulaney was on the other show. And I went over and I was kind of, you know, I did my set and I went over and I was hanging out. And then, you know, like, everyone's there. And I saw him. And I was like, "Hey, man, you know," and I said, I told him the truth. I go, "Dude, I can tell you right now, like, you know, your last record, the New York new in town." I was like, "My daughter and I, like, that's our jam. Like, only comedy record really." He's like, "Oh, thanks." And then later on, he goes, "Hey, man," you know, I go, "Hey, could I grab a photo?" And he was getting ready to do something. He goes, later on, he goes, "Hey, Joe, let's get that photo." And I was like, "Dude, did he just call me by my first name?" So I was like, "Okay, in my mind, I'm like, it's on. Like, John Mulaney's my bro.
Yes.
We're gonna hang."
You're planning trips.
Yeah.
"Dude, we're going suit shopping. Like, John, I always wanted to wear a suit."
That is a very bro thing to do to create immediate camaraderie.
I had a fantasy.
Let me see somebody measure you everywhere. There's no better way to get to know a dude inside and out.
Let me see a 72-year-old Turkish man run his hand up your thigh very slowly.
Yeah, the back of his index finger graze the tip of your testicle.
You're like, "Sir, you've already measured me."
Not with my mouth.
Yeah.
You're like, okay.
So
where's Gravedigger?
The thing that ended up happening was we took the photo, and then later on I ran into him one night doing a spot at the Improv, and I was like, "Oh, cool, like, we're bros now.
There's my friend again."
And not that he wasn't cool.
Yeah.
But did you say, "Hey, best friend John Mulaney"?
No, I went, "Hey, bro, I heard you're living in Glen." I shouldn't say where he lives. "I heard you're living, you know, blah, blah, blah." And he kind of looked at me like, "How do you know I'm living there?" And in the eyes, it was like, "Hi," but it was also like, "You need to take a few steps back."
Yeah.
And it's not happening. And I just was like, "Oh, okay." Like, not that he was lame, because if anyone's like, "Dude, you were lame to Joseph John Mulaney," he won't care. But my point being was, it was the look in the eyes of just, "It's not happening, dude." It's such a bummer, because you're like, "I thought it was gonna happen."
Yeah.
But I love him still.
Yeah. And I'll tell you that it's probably a bummer for him too. Because he's probably to the point where, like, "Oh no," like, he came at me with such hope. And then I gotta let him know, like, "Hey,
yeah,
All packed up on friends guy.
Yeah. And that's a great analogy. Packed up on friends. Got enough.
I've gotten to that point. I'm 35 where it's like, I'm pretty good with the friends. Like, I've got, you got to come at me with something really strong to make me go, okay.
And by strong, he means super famous.
Yeah, and powerful, and you got to have a water slide in your backyard.
No, but these are the things that you figure out as you get older as a dude where you're like, how many more new dude friends are you looking to pick up?
Yeah, and I think also as you get older, like
for me, you trust less too.
I have my core group of guys, and I'm sure all of us at this table have our core friends. I could go to in my phone right now. My best friend Buddy. I've been friends with this guy since seventh grade.
Well, his name is Buddy.
His Buddy. It's not even his real name.
Yeah, you go to hell if you delete Buddy out of your phone.
Yeah, he's literally your buddy.
I would say.
What else could he be?
I would say that it's him, and then the dude I started Side One Dummy with, Bill Armstrong. We've talked on the phone or been in the same room with each other for 24 years. Like he's. Yeah. And I have other friends that I love and you know, if they're listening, hey man, you know who you are. But but as you do get older, like I feel that you have that moment, especially once you get married and have kids, you start to say, bro, you know what? Like there's nothing to bring to the table. I can't go to a barbecue at your house. Your kids are too young or your kids are too old. Right. Hey, check it out. I've met your wife. Not going to get along with my wife. Your wife's super hot. My wife's not going to like that. We're done. Move on. There's plenty of people. You live in the Valley. I can't drive there. I'm sorry.
Now, have you had to break up a friendship? Like call someone and essentially say like, hey man, it's just done.
I've never had that moment. The only time I've ever had like a moment, especially now because my wife and I, like I just described, you know, we just went through kids that were, you know, three-year-olds to now 17-year-olds. And mm-hmm. and they, you know, it, we used to, thank you. They used to have the pool, you know, we still do, you know, the pool with the backyard and the barbecue, and you have all the families over and you got to pretend, you know, because my son's friend with your son and, you know, your son, I don't really care, but the parents of the son are lame, but I got to pretend for a whole, you know, and you're not, I don't want to say lame because I don't want to hurt anyone's feeling, but
I will. It's the kid hard. Sucks. Or the parent sucks.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
You know, and then it was just this whole thing of, you know, a lot of just conversations where, and this is so bad because I can't do it, where I have to fake I'm excited about we're really excited and Nathan got into blah 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 school and we're just realizing right now that he's learning differently, and you're just like, dude, I don't fucking care.
You're just looking at the grill going,
yeah,
if I slam my head onto this grill and have burn marks into my face, like, will I get out of this conversation?
A quote from my wife once was, I was like, gosh, you know, I feel like sometimes when we have the people over, the parties go so fast. And she's like, well, yeah, because if you're drunk at every single one of them, you won't remember them, Joe. And I was like, really? She's like, how many Heinekens did you power to? You know,
you're like, enough to tolerate Tim's stories,
dude,
which is 20.
So much. And also, and you guys know this, when you're in that setting, like, I don't know, but like the level of people joking around, like the jokes that they're laughing at, like, and then I said, I'll shut the door if you don't want me to. And and you're like, oh my God, this guy's crushing it at this table right now. Like, really? Like, oh my, so the story about shutting the door before asking to, that's going to kill, right? Like, you know, or, you know, what's a, you know, the vegetarian, vegan, it's the same thing.
You're like, geez.
You know, so that would, I was, what I love now is my wife and I, like, we, you know, our kids are teenagers, they're on their way doing their thing. My daughter's graduating, she's doing her thing. My son, it's like we kind of got it, like, not say, we never had to say goodbye to everyone. They just kind of not coming back.
They just faded away. Yeah, which is good because when they're little kids, they have to bring the parents with them, or there's a lot of interaction.
Exactly.
But when they're teenagers, they don't need the adults around. They don't want the adults around. And you're like, awesome.
A little bit.
I'm done. And that's going to be even weirder for you because, I mean, hell, it's tough enough for most comics to talk to people that aren't comics just because we're really good at telling stories and other people just aren't. It's just, we're just better at it, all right?
I have said after a couple of drinks, trim the fat on that one.
Tighten it up. Notes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's
too wordy.
It's going to be even crazier for you because you're also coming from the rock star world.
I don't know about rock star.
So it's like, but so between being a comic
and being in the music industry, like, your stories are like, okay, is there any cocaine and hookers in your story? If not, shut the fuck up. I have you beat. Like,
that's so funny because I never did drugs. I've never done drugs in my whole life.
Really?
Never.
I never. Yeah, that's so crazy. No, yeah, because you've also been, and we'll get into it, like, your music world background is bonkers, but now you're just as hard into the comedy portion.
Yeah.
So it's like you're living, I don't know if there's two worlds that have drugs around more so. Maybe Best Buy greeter and Subway sandwich artist.
Yeah, because that's how you got to get through that day.
Well, yeah, how are you making 50 sandwiches in an hour? Cocaine.
Yeah. Or just tolerate the guy coming in saying, that's too much lettuce. You're like, fuck, I got to pop
and
you
go, LSD. God, I thought that was roast beef. Yeah. You know,
I'm convinced that a lot of people at Trader Joe's are, they got to be on coke because they're just too stoked to be there.
Well, dude, I can attest.
I love it.
I bag groceries for a handful of years at Albertsons, and I can tell you that people at grocery stores are on drugs.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Yeah,
I mean, thankfully, I was in high school, and yet hadn't succumbed to the pressures around me yet, because I was just like, if I smoke weed, I'll probably die. And then it's like, I just watched the wrong video, you know.
Sure.
You'll die of of too much fun, you know. Yeah. If that's what you want.
Or eating too much.
What made you want to stay away? Because you know, obviously, again, I don't know if it was the temptation or seeing one instance that made you just go, all right, that looks like a bad time. Or was it folks? Or was it, because you have this like amazing energy and very personable, and like, I'm sure some people have met you, they've been like, dude, what do you want? Because you're so happy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I wish I could tell you like, oh yeah, I didn't get into drugs because I had this not moral, but just this idea of I was gonna be different or something. I'll be honest, like if you could have told me, I think. If you could have told me, hey, you can get high, you know, and I tried getting stoned, it just, the thing was, is that I didn't like the fact that once it started, there was no way to get off that train. Like, if you told me, like right now.
Sure, there is. Eat two bags of Sun Chips.
Yeah, see, yeah, I don't, yeah. I never had that. My experience was I got high, and then the next thing I know, I'm just like taking a shower at a house, and there's
go
a
party. On.
It's just a nightmare.
Did you know the people at the house?
No.
Okay.
That was a party. Bad. It was a 4th of July party. It was, the last time I smoked weed was literally like 3 blocks away from here. It was.
I love that.
I went on I was actually on a weed run. Like, I got on, like, for about 6 months, I was weed dude. Like, I had the pipe.
Where's that cartoon?
I know. I was the weed guy. Like, I was into it. And, like, you know, just like you said, Adam, like, when I get into something, I get into it. Like, I was like, I smoke weed now. And I remember I went to this party on 4th of July. And it was before, you know, now with, like, we grow the weed in the lava rock and the guy with the lab jet. Like, this was, like, backyard. And it was the hydroponic stuff. Sure.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a bomb on the table, and you know that pre moment before a party where, like, you know, there people are like, all right, the DJ is going over there, okay, you load that. And I showed up at that time where the guy, it'd be like, you'd be like, yo Joe, dude, you want a beer? And I'm like, look we're getting set up, just chill. And I saw the bong, and I'm like, hey, can I hit this? And the guy yelled from, like, in the back, yeah. But he said something else. I didn't listen. So I take a huge rip off the bong, and I do the thing where, because I'm weed guy, I pull the top off where the chamber and the finger, you know, it looks like it's like an accord. Yeah. It's like a flute.
Oh, yeah.
All of it goes in my lung. I'm like, dude, I just nailed that thing. And then the guy comes in, and I remember he says to his girlfriend, he's like, huh, oh my God, Joe, did you just dust that bowl? I go, yeah. And he goes, oh, dude, that's the green cherub, you know, hydroponic that Stan grows. And I swear it, like, I was like, what? And he goes, dude, I hope you're not busy because it's on. And literally as he said that, dude, I could feel it go from the back of my spine to the back of my head. And it was like, like you know when they show pictures of like the rocket ship or like it's going through NASA and then that little rocket the next, you know, whoa, the boost happens and then you're like, dude, I was flying through space so high that it got to the point where like people were trying to talk to me, hey, what's up, Joe? I couldn't. I go, dude, don't talk to me. I was so high. I don't know why. I was like, I gotta take a shower. And then they're like, dude, it's the middle of a party. They're like, bro, why are you in our shower? And I'm like, I don't know. And then like they finally go, the couple was like, we gotta put Joe somewhere because I started cleaning up the party, putting it away. People were like, why is he putting away the party?
And the party's still happening.
Party's
and you're trying
started.
To put it away.
And I'm putting it away. Dude, this is like deep. I'm in it, putting it away. Finally, I'll never forget it. They put me in their room, and they're like, hey, man, just cruise in here. And I remember there was like that television show, Dick Van Dyke, you know?
Yeah.
And it was like a marathon. And I was sitting there watching it, and all of a sudden, I'm like,
I watched all 100 episodes.
Dude, you ready for this? I'm going to tell you something. I was like, there's no black people on Dick Van Dyke. This is heavy racist. Where? And then there was
Please tell me you got up and announced that to the party.
Dude, I not only didn't announce it to the party, for like 2 days I told people.
It's a big deal.
There was one episode I remember with, I forgot who it was that came on it, and then I was like, okay.
Not a black person.
Dude, no, one black. Oh, one it was. Black, there was okay, one episode. So finally one. Yeah. But dude, I'm talking sun rising, and they finally go, Joe, we're going to bed. You got to get out. What time is it? And it was the joke, dude. Like 5 a.m. And I'm like, waiting. I came in here a few minutes ago, and they're like, you've been in here. I was so high, dude. I walked from La Cienega down to the beach.
Yeah.
You know, like Santa Monica, like just Santa Monica Boulevard, like all the way to the like still high. It lasted for 3 days.
For the people that aren't from here, that's a couple miles.
A good 4 hour walk. And guess what? I've done almost everything you've said in that story. Showered at a random house, check. Walked too far to get the high down, check.
Okay.
Watched a Dick Van Dyke marathon, no. But watched now? A Family Matters marathon, check. Tried to put a party away, yeah. These are all symptoms of being too high.
Yeah, it was a nightmare. And for me.
And that was Uno. That was number one time. That was
No! I you know what it was like I had.
This is the first time you'd done it a little bit too much.
No, this was like what happened was this was like I was living in L.A. I was never a drug guy back home. I grew up in Northern California. Never did any drugs. I remember once I bought when I was in high school. They used to sell Black Beauties. You know, it was like Speed, and I was going to see the Circle Jerks in San Francisco, and I was like, I'm gonna do Speed and see the Circle Jerks, and I carried around. I got them on a Friday. I went to San Francisco, carried them around that whole night. Came back to San Jose, went back up to San Francisco, carried them around on Sunday. I was like, I don't know, and then I went back to the guy that sold them. I'm like, hey man, what's up? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, you know those Black Beauties you sold me? He's like, yeah. And I'm like, I didn't use them. Can I get my $5 back? And I remember right then I found out there's like a no return policy on drugs. He just looked at me like, get the fuck away.
Yeah. And then you called the cops. It was like, hey, I'm trying to get these drugs back, and the guy won't give me my dick.
I would be the type of guy that would ask my dad, like, dad, you know. But I just never was a drug guy. But when I came down to LA, and it was just this moment in time, this one summer where I was like, I'm gonna smoke weed. I want to smoke weed, and there was I had some good moments on it, but that it was July 4th, and that was it. And that was like that's like 15, 20 years ago. Like it was so long ago, it just wrecked me.
Wait, so growing up in NorCal, what part specifically?
San Jose, Santa Cruz. My mom lived in Santa Cruz. My parents got separated. I grew up in the mountains of Santa Cruz. Up until about 10 years old, redwood trees, horses.
Wow.
My parents were like the original, like I always say they were like the original hipsters, or like they're both Italian, Catholic, Irish. My mom Irish, my dad Italian, and they were just like from the East Coast, and they were like, we just want to go to California and get away from our parents, get away from religion, get away from everything we're supposed to do.
Yeah.
Let's go as far away as we can. And they moved to Santa Cruz. And my dad at that point was teaching at Santa Clara University. And what they wanted to do was build a ranch where they would have horses that they would take care of. Because that was the big dream for my mom and dad, to ride horses. Like my dad grew up with, you know, those television shows like I think Bonanza and Gunsmoke. And it was like, it's the equivalent of like a monster truck rally. Like, that's what I want to do. You know, like he was like, I want to ride horses. I want to do this. And they came to California and they built this ranch and they took care of horses. I had no interest in it.
Yeah.
I was like, I wanted cement. I wanted to be in the city. I wanted to skate. I was really into skateboarding. That's where I first started skateboarding.
Wow.
This little patch of cement.
Tough to skateboard on a farm.
Dude. Yeah. And you ready for this? Adam, you'll love this. I threw a skateboard contest out there. And I won it, of course.
Yeah. Home court advantage.
And I skated against kids that had never skateboarded and they had cowboy boots on. Like, they're like, what are
How
we doing?
They not
like,
win?
Yeah, I'm like, we're going to have a skateboard.
That's like bringing tampons to a knife fight. Like, you're not prepared. Is the point of that. So were there other animals besides the
horses? Yeah, we had everything. Horses. We had horses and goats, and we had our own well with water.
You had goats?
We had everything.
And the whole time you're just
not into it.
You're just thinking like, I gotta get out of here. I gotta get to the
city. I was
city.
Probably the only kid that when his parents got divorced, I was like, yes, that's a good idea. I was happy for them. Like,
you're like fingers crossed, someone's gonna move to the city.
Yeah.
Was it like who gets the mom, well, who gets the mom, goat?
Yeah.
Like,
okay. No, not at all. At this point, when they got separated, my dad's like, I'm moving to San Jose. 40 minutes away. My mom's like, I'm moving into this Santa Cruz. At that point, the city, which, you're right by the beach. I was like, let's go. And immediately that was just the best because we moved into this like apartment and, you know, sidewalks everywhere. I was near the beach. I started meeting other kids that skateboarded. It was
game over, right?
Yeah, it was on.
And you knew that was going to happen.
I was hoping that was going to happen.
You were like, I can't keep living near a well because I might fall into it and never get out.
Be the boy in the well.
I mean, that's my first thought. Anyone has, did you, I mean, nobody fell in the well, right?
No one fell in the well.
But you had to get out and you did. And then, like, was there one moment where you, like, in the city skateboarding, like, what was your first taste of city life that was so like, oh, man, this is what I was fiending for?
Oh, I'll tell you. Yeah. I met these kids, and we were living in this apartment. And they go, hey, man, do you skateboard? And I was like, yeah. And at that point, like, skateboarding wasn't a sport that is today where it's like, hey, we're going to, you know, you're going to be on ESPN and you're sponsored. And you're the good kid.
It was just rebels.
I skateboard because I smoke a lot of weed and I've been asked to leave my high school. Oh, really? You know, it was very like the kid that skated was, he was an individual. He was totally different than the rest of the kids.
Sure. They still got girls though, right? Yeah. I remember kids in my high school, like a lot of them that skateboarded, got girls, you know, and some were better than others.
Totally.
But there was always a girl that was like, I like that he doesn't wear shoes. Shoes or are holding shirt. Him back.
Yeah. Santa Cruz, nothing.
Yeah. Santa Cruz is the capital of
no shirt.
Let those nipples breathe.
Dude. And also,
good band name.
But I let those nipples breathe. That's an album name.
Yeah.
That's not a band name. The thing that for me that was so cool was at that point, you know, I'm probably like seventh grade and I'm living with my mom and it's great because also, I'm experiencing that, you know, mom has to work. So there's a lot of time that I don't have. Like now I'm able to like do what I want to do and hang out with who I want to hang out with. And, but I was also a kid that was super like, I never hung out with sketchy kids. Like I knew sketchy kids. Like this is something I go through with my son all the time because he'll have friends that are straight up. Like I go, you know, he'll be like, Dad, my friends think you don't like them. You know, when you meet them, you know, they think you don't like them. I'm all, dude, tell them I don't like them. Because they're not cool. They're like, I know what you guys are doing. Yeah. And they'll be like, we're, you know, this one, they'll be sitting around. I go, what do you guys do? We're going to go hang out down at, you know, Fairfax. And I go, no, you're not. There's nothing going on Fairfax that you need to be doing. No, but we skate down there. And I tell them straight. I go, you guys aren't even skaters. I'm 51 and I'm skate better skater. Than you. And I skate more than you.
Yeah. Let me show you a kickflip.
No, but I'm like, dude, you guys, they're like, no. And I go, you just carry it around. No, we don't.
I wish I could tell your kids too, right?
I got two.
Two, yeah. Both boys, right?
No, I got my daughter. My daughter's 17 and my son is about to be 15.
I wish I could tell them how fucking lucky they are to have you as a pops because...
That's funny.
Also, it's like their friends, I'm sure there are too, some friends of theirs that like are like, oh yeah, your dad's a shit. Like they get it, right?
And there'll be some kids...
And they'll be cool with you. Yeah,
there was a kid...
And they'll let you be yourself around them.
Totally. Yeah. No, there's this one kid that you know, and it's... He I've heard him say, because my son will... You know, I'll say, hey, you know, you guys, let's do this. And my son will say, you know, there'll be some pushback. And I'll be like, hey, bro, you know, dude, we're not doing that. And he'll push back again. And I'll hear his friend say, you know, to my son, Nate, hey, Nate, dude, your dad's right. Like, we don't need to go there. And I'll look at the kid and you know, he's saying like, bro, we're stoked that we got to do A, B, and C. Your dad's not into driving us to Burbank and hanging out at Good Guys or whatever sketchy place you want to hang out at, you know? and that, you know, that's just where we're at. You know, I mean, literally the last, like if you said to me, cause a while ago, someone said to me like, you know, they're like, dude, you know, did you hear what Trump did? Or, you know, just all the politics going on. And I was like, dude, if Trump isn't talking about vaping or is it, like, I don't know. All I know that I'm into right now is vaping. Like I'm monitoring people vaping. That's like I'm looking for the pen. I'm looking for the, like the difference between cartridges. The nicotine, the cartridges. Yeah. And I've gotten so good at being able to catch it. Being able to, like, you know, the other night, these kids came over and they're all hanging out and they're like, okay, what's up? And I always, the kids like, hey, what's up, Mr. Sibna? And he's over the top. I'm like, dude, I know this game. Okay.
You're being super nice
because there's beers in that backpack, bro. Yeah. I get it. There's beers in that backpack. They're warm. You don't even know where you got them from. And like, he had the backpack on and I'm and they're like, yeah, we're going down to the park. And I'm like, okay. Really? We go to the park at 8 at night in the rain? Oh, okay. Yeah, we're going to go down there and just hang out. And I'm like, okay, cool. And the backpack's on. I'm like, yeah, we'll leave the backpack because you guys... And then they all look at me. And I'm all, yeah, we're leaving the backpack. What do you mean? And then, like, the bro looks, they all look at each other like, how do we get out of this? Like, I've got them in this Houdini, like, lockdown.
Oh, yeah.
And then I go, yeah, you know what? And I just reach over there and I grab the backpack and I can just, you know, you just know the weight of, of 40s.
Yeah.
And, and then they go like this. I go, yeah, well, you know, maybe we won't go to the park. I go, no. You're going to the park.
You're going to go on those slides.
Yeah, yeah.
Sober.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is the decision that you've made.
Dude, my daughter had a party once. I'll never forget it. This is a true story. This is a true story. This is the difference, though, with my daughter, though. Yeah. This is how rad she is.
Yeah, yeah.
She would throw a party and not indulge in any, like, activity. And I would say to her friends, come on, man. Does she, like, they go, no. She doesn't. Joe, there'd be Mr. Sib. She doesn't, you know, she doesn't drink. You know, she doesn't smoke weed. She just, you know, she's just her. And I go, really? She had this party. She had all these people at the house. It was raging so hard, this party. It was over by 10 o'clock at night. I mean, like, let's put it this way.
At your house?
This is at my house. You ready for this? I have these two guys that live next door to me. It's two Armenian brothers. Because I live in Glendale. Everyone's Armenian except our family.
It's true, huh?
Oh, everybody.
Like, you hear the jokes, but it truly
They love me, though. They think I'm Armenian. They've as long as you. I don't talk too much.
Well, sure.
Yeah.
Jet black hair. You got some hair on your body.
V-neck. I got the black V-neck.
Yeah, wait, so exactly. What? Okay, so you got some best friends.
So these two guys, these teenagers, I've known them forever, where they used to throw ragers. And I would go, hey, man, check it out. Like, I know your dad, and he's not going to be stoked. So here's the deal. Put the party inside the house. Go as late as you want. And I remember one time, you know, they, like, were raging out there. And the next morning, I went over, and I knocked on the door, and the Armenian brothers, you know, they answered the door. And it was so funny because I thought, like, the way they were talking, because I just hear them through a fence.
Yeah.
Like, every other word, motherfucker, gonna fuck you up. I'm like, I was a little sketch. Like, dude, is there gonna be a throwdown? But I gotta let these guys know we can't be raging in the backyard smoking weed with my 5 and 6 year olds.
No.
Like, dad, why does it smell like a skunk back here?
Yeah.
You know, like, my son.
Because they got the sticky icky, son. Yeah.
So anyway, I went over there, befriended them. And for years they've always, you know, now they're like, you know, they're adults. And I said to them, hey, man, my daughter's having this party. Can you guys run the
supply
front
the
door?
Weed? No. Oh, okay. Sorry. Yeah.
Can you run the front door? So I literally had them run in the front door, and this was so great. It was a party in June. I'll never forget it. The next day, I was at my son's baseball game, and I see these parents, and they're like, oh my God, did you see that my son was at this party last night? And they're showing this video, and I look over, yeah, that's my house. And they're like, what? I'm like, yeah, that's my house. They're like, you had a party like that? I'm like, yeah. There was anyone there? I go, well, I wasn't allowed to go to it. My wife was. She was, you know, upstairs watching. But, dude, it got so out of control. But this is the best part about it. My two Armenian brothers that were next, that monitored the door, and they were great. Every kid.
They were the bouncers?
Dude, they were the bouncers. And the kids were showing up. I swear to God, you guys, I'm not making this up. Yeah. Kids were showing up, cases of beer, and the guy would be like, whoa, no, bro, you're not bringing that in. What? Just take it from him. And then he'd put it by the side door or by our garage. And then kids would show up. Dude, kids were showing up with cigars. Bro, we're not bringing cigars in. Bringing bottles of brand. I mean, dude, it's all Pasadena 17-year-olds. Kids.
17-year-olds?
Dude, 16-year-olds, 17-year-olds. Dude, we to this day, once in a while, Karen will be like, where's this liqueur from? I'm like, we got it from the party. Like, I confiscated so much alcohol.
It's a great way to just
get more
booze.
It lasted our whole summer.
Yeah.
I'm not making sense. Adam, I had beer. I remember the party was in June. I had beer till December. At Thanksgiving, people were like,
by the way,
you have so much beer. And I was like, yeah,
yeah.
Here you go.
Throw one teen party and you're set for the year.
This is a brilliant formula to acquire booze for a party every year that you title confiscation, and you go, this year, where are you holding confiscation? What day is it? Well, this year we're going to do it on Purim because everyone's traveling, or Flag Day, or 4th of July, and you have the kids host a party,
kids.
Have the Armenian bouncers be there,
yep.
Acquire all the booze, take it back from your 15, 16, 17-year-old self, which shouldn't have it, put it in a fucking, garage, and then go and then bring that out for the adult party called Confiscation.
I'm telling you,
who's right, also their first album is Let the Nipples Breathe.
Right,
Let the Nipples Breathe. I'll tell you right now, the best thing about it was, though, because I get so paranoid, and every parent, you know, if there's any parent that, you know, you're like, dude, I can't believe you'd have, you know, these people, kids back there, you know, drinking. But the thing that
keep it in your house, though, right?
No, what I was gonna say is this. we had it at our house, but the thing that was so awesome about it was there never was any alcohol. It was the most, these kids were so, like, they came so fired up
to drink.
And if they had drank before they got in, they had a good time. But once they got there, they were
they realized they didn't need it, right?
Yeah, because my neighbor, he was so great. And the thing I loved about him was he wasn't some old guy. He was a young dude. He's like 22 years old, 23 years old. So he was just like, hey, bro, no. And like, I remember these kids were like, but I just... Because you remember getting a case of beer when you're 17.
He was spent like, all was, week doing that.
Yeah.
Maybe two.
Yeah.
That's like a lot of...
And he was impressing a girl bringing that over. She was like, well, I like Natty Ice, but I've been more of a Don Julio girl lately. And he's like, I gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Little did he know.
And you remember this. Dude, so are we going to that party? Yeah. Dude, you got beers, right? Yeah. Dude, I got a 12 or Coors Light, dude. Right. Okay.
I've been hiding in my bed for 3 months.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And waiting for the perfect occasion. Here it is.
So that was for my wife and I. But this party... So what I'm trying to say is that I've been super... fortunate that my kids, like, as much as, you know, you said like their friends might be like, your dad's cool, like, but I will say this for my daughter, what's just started to happen, which is super cool, is so like if I'm doing a set at the Improv and it's a Thursday night, I've like in the past I'd be like, it was always like if I headlined, it'd be like a family event, like dad's headlining,
yeah,
and we all gonna go. And the Improv, which is great, they give them a table. They love the family being there. Same with the Ha Ha. Like Jack Senior loves when you bring your kids and your family.
That's awesome.
But the thing lately with the Improv is that if I get a spot, I've had my daughter go, hey, I saw that you're on at 10 tonight. I'm bringing my girlfriends. And now they'll come to a show and they're all underage. So for them, they get into a place that they can be, you know, it's okay. It's not illegal for them to be there.
Right.
They get to sit at a table and now they're into stand-up. So like, whoa, you know, they'll come, that's they'll see cool. a show. And it's just a trip because they get there before me and like, you know,
to Joe, see other comics.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Joe will be like, hey man, your daughter's in there. And you know, she's got a table in the back. We set her up, you know, and I'll be like, wow. And you know, and they're not being lame. They're just like, they're you know, comedy's happening.
That's
and
they cool. get to
go. By the way, how great is that the kids are doing that and you can have that access.
Dude, one of the best feeling in the world
they're watching stand-up.
One of the best feeling is your daughter coming to the show that you're on and you're like, wow. One of the worst feelings is seeing her leave and you're like, I haven't gone up. And she's like, I know. Like, I just wanted to see Spade, or you know, I heard Eric Griffin just got, I love him, or fuck, you know, Jason Collings, we think he, I'm like,
and you're like, these are all homies of mine, but also I made you, they didn't.
Yeah. She's like, Dad, it's okay. But you know, she's
also
stay.
You know, those things called lights. Yeah, my jokes keep these on.
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe support them.
Yeah, I remember I had a joke. I had a joke once where I was arguing with like my son or someone, and it was about swearing, and there was a clip of mine, and they were like, you know, I was like, dude, you can't just be dropping F-bombs. And he's like, you do, I see what you say it on stage sometimes. And that was when like I would swear more, and all I could say was, you know what, F-bombs pay for a lot of the things that you have.
Yes.
You know,
like, when your F-bombs start paying, then you can do it.
Yeah, when your F-bombs can heat the pool, then start swearing.
Wait, did you do F-bombs when you performed magic in the Bay Area?
Oh my God, you went deep.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, baby.
I didn't. I wouldn't, because I would perform at the petting zoo and you cannot swear. Happy Hollow Park.
Just like there's no sex in the champagne room, there's no cursing at the petting zoo.
Even Happy Hollow Park. Even like the goat takes a bite of your favorite shirt, you can't be like, fucking goat. Like, you know, you can't do that. No, apparently not. No. Okay.
It's got to be the TBS version. No. Freaking goat.
I loved magic when I was a kid.
Yeah. Well,
me too.
Brad? Really, are you being serious? Of
course. Swear to God, my mom bought me multiple of the crappy toy store, like, you too can be a magician in just six easy steps. Yeah. And here's 52 tricks that nobody will ever know how you did them.
Yeah.
Psych. Everyone knows. Because these box of tricks suck. But then we would go to legit magic stores in downtown Seattle, where like the guy running the shop's been doing it since he was 10.
I love that.
And he's just like, you know, pulling birds out, you know, of his ass before he like shows you a card trick.
That wasn't a magic store.
Okay, well,
that was a gay strip club.
I don't remember that.
Well, the gay strip club was, the magic club was inside of the gay strip club.
Well, and that was the trick.
Yeah.
I
bought a book that I would bring to class.
Yeah.
That, remember, where you turn the pages at the bottom, it was blank. And if you flipped through the book from the middle, it was all outlined, right? So black and white. And then if you turn it from the top, those outlines were filled in with color. And I brought that book to school and blew everyone's fucking mind. I remember even my teacher, who was like, such a bitch. And she was just like, so, just an evil fourth grade teacher. She meant well, but like, just, you know, probably had a lot going on. I remember I did that trick for her one day, and I'll never forget her face, just kind of like, she paused, and then she just goes, how did you do that? And I was like,
magic.
That's exactly. Yeah. You knew as a kid, even just to go say magic at the end and walk away. And I remember I tripped over something and fucking, you know, wasn't cool about it. But what got you into it?
I mean, for me, like, well, the thing when you were describing going to a magic store, I just remember, like, even like for me, the first rock stars for me, like, as much as I like, you know, there's Joe Strummer, Joey Ramone, Bon Scott, you know, you know, like all these favorite singers of mine that I loved. But suddenly he digressed into a New Yorker. The first true rock stars for me were magicians. And as a kid, it was, because you know what it was? If you think about magicians, it's very theatrical.
Yes. Sure.
It's all theatrical. You know, and if you think about music, a lot of it's theatrical. Yeah. Sex Pistols, that's theatrical. Yeah. Iron Maiden, very theatrical.
Why does Kiss sell tickets?
Kiss, exactly.
Not because the music's good. There, I said it.
There you go. No, but
it's a show.
It's a show.
It's an experience.
And for
it's
me,
a whole thing.
I've always been this way. When Houdini, when I saw the movie, there's this movie from years ago, it's Houdini story with Tony Curtis, and it'll totally age me, but like there was a
Tony
moment.
Tony Curtis, well done.
Yeah, and it was good, like, reference. I loved that movie as a kid. I was a little boy. My parents, I watched it, and when they put him in this, it was it was like a big metal box, and they chained him up, and they threw him into this river, and then he had to escape. I literally was like, there's nothing cooler than that. Like, that is so rock star that he comes swimming back up, and he got out, and it's magic, and it just, it, I got into it so much. And then what ended up happening is my dad, and was so, he was into it too. Like, he was like, okay, you're into magic, that's cool. And we used to, I had all these books, and I started really getting into it. And I remember we learned a trick a week, and we'd sit at the table, and I'd break out my book. And then, you know, the tricks went from the box that Adam's talking about with all the terrible tricks to all of a sudden, like, learning real legit tricks and really, really getting into it. And I remember even at one point, my friends, like, I was so into it when we were living on the ranch, we literally lived across, this is how far out we were. We lived across the street from a creek, like, and not like a creek, like a stream. Like, I'm talking like, this is a creek and it's deep. And during the winter, you know, it's rushing by. Mm-hmm. And I remember we had just gotten new trash cans to put feed in for all of the animals.
Yeah.
And I talked my friends, I'm all, dude, this checks out. So I'm going to do, you guys, I have my handcuffs. I'm like, you're gonna handcuff me. You're gonna put me in this trash can, and then you're gonna chain the top of it, and you're gonna throw me in the creek because I'm gonna get out. And this, I'm not making this up. I'm 10 years old, and they put me in, and they're carrying me across the front lawn to down to the creek. And just by chance, by God's hand, my dad was sitting. He was out front doing something. Goes, hey. He could tell they're struggling because they're, you know, they're two friends are carrying their bro in a trash can.
Yeah.
And then he's like, hey, you know, and this is how cool my dad was. Hey, what's going on? What are you guys doing? And they're like,
oh, we're definitely not trying to throw your son in the creek.
Goes, where's Joey? And they're like, oh, he's in the trash can. He's, oh, really? That's great. Like, my dad's a real positive guy. He's like, oh, that's great. Joey's in the trash can. Yeah. He's like, what are you doing there? Dad, they're going to throw me in the creek. Oh, you guys are going across the street. You're going to throw him in the creek. Oh, okay, great. And he's going to escape, right? And they're like, yeah. And he's like, okay. He's like, hey, check it out. Why don't we do a test run up here, and I'll run the hose over the top with him in it. And they're like, okay, that might be a better idea. And then, that's what he did. And, you know, I got out. But I was so into magic.
Like, wow. Like, even at 10,
I was like,
could you have gotten out of the trash can?
Absolutely.
You had it all.
Oh, dude, I had it all planned out.
Wow.
I can tell you right now, here's the deal. I have the first time because, like, you know how people always say, hey, when was the first time you ever went on stage? And as stand-ups, you know, we say,
sure,
January 6, 2000 or whatever.
Right.
You know, when was the first time your band played? I know.
Mm-hmm.
The first time I ever went on stage and did a show, like, and you guys will, like, we used to go to this pizza parlor. It was called Art's Pizza. It was on 41st Avenue in Santa Cruz. We would go there, and it was the place, like, you get grape soda, you play your shuffleboard, they play the music.
Oh, this is my spot.
Everyone
I love
eats
this.
Pizza, dude. Yes. They got the the video games, the quarters. And then I said to my dad, I was sitting there and I was eating pizza and I was 10 years old. And I go, Dad, you know, it'd be great. And he goes, what? I go, you know what? If we did a magic show here. And he goes, really? And I'll never forget. He goes, and this is how great my dad is. He goes, you know, Joe, you know what? That's a good idea. Which, you know, when you're, think about a pizza parlor in the Sebs, like, I don't think anyone's like, you know what we need right now? Yeah. We need a kid dressed in satin to come up and do magic for us. Like, I don't think, what? I think,
it's like, you got the video games, you got the pizza, you got the shuffleboard.
The last,
we're good.
Yeah, we're good. We got everything
we're good.
Need. But my dad goes, okay. And I go, how do we do it? And he goes, you need to ask the owner. And this was a huge lesson for me at 10 years old. I walked, can I talk to Art? And they go, yeah. And this big Italian man came over. And I said, and my dad goes, tell him your idea. And I go, hey, you know, I'd like to come back next week and do a magic show. And I remember, like, he looked at me, and probably my dad was like standing behind me, like, no, just let him do it. You know, whatever, you know, we'll be cool. And the guy said, okay, come back next week and you can have Friday night. And that was my first gig I ever booked. And I came back, I had my assistants, and they put me in my closer was, and this is what I wore on stage, ready? A black, you remember that movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind? That was our jam. I wore, for some reason, I thought that's magical.
Oh my God.
I wore my mom's, she had these white like gloves, you know, and I had feathered hair and blue, this was the deal, wore my blue cords with my desert boots and I had, and I did all my magic tricks and my closer was I escaped from the box with the handcuffs on.
Wow.
Yeah, and that was my closer.
And did you publicize the show?
Oh, dude, I mean, I remember I packed it out.
You know? Look at that.
Yeah, I asked all those parents.
And then, of course, the guy like, all right, here's a free slice of pizza. Oh. When really, he should have given you half the door.
I remember this, though. We did get, I remember I started doing more shows of pizza at the Arts Pizza, and I remember a lot of pizza was being, like, my dad was really in, like, this is a good thing. And then I remember I started getting, like, different shows here and there. And it always, like, I remember we got tickets to the East-West Shrine football game.
Oh, yeah.
And I was bummed. I'm like, I don't want these tickets. And my dad's like, nope, that's a good gift. There you go. Like, he's like, we're going, you know,
because
see all the top college players.
Sure.
But, magic. The magic, I always say.
So that was your intro into performing.
Into show business, man.
That's fucking crazy.
I loved it.
And then how you go from magic to rock bands, punk rock?
Because I realized, like, if I, like, you know what ended up happening was, at a certain point, well, like,
it's a lot of the same outfits.
Girls weren't really into the scarfs, and, you know, like, you realize,
oh, you were 20 years too early, because now they're all about it.
Yeah. You know, what ended up happening for me was, it was, throughout that whole time, I kept skateboarding, and then when, my dad moved to San Jose, he took me to this place called Winchester Skateboard Park, and that, I was talking to someone the other day, and that was really, like, if there's one, like, you know, they say through your life, there's, like, pivotal moments.
Sure.
You know, that you know, things that you remember that set you on the path for the rest of your life. And Winchester Skateboard Park, it was a pivotal moment because it really put me on the path, like, to, like, sitting here with you guys. And I know it sounds crazy, but it was such a pivotal moment because I had gone from a kid that was into magic and I loved skateboarding, but I didn't know that there was actually a sport and other people that did it. So, and I was only into my parents' music at this moment. I was into, like, what they listened to, you know, and what they had at the ranch, and they had good parties. And I was always the guy, like, my mom and dad, you know, at a young age had a great taste in music, and they would, you know, hey, Joey, go over there and put some music on. So I knew, like, hey, you know what? It's the beginning of the party. So I'm going to put on, you know, the Bee Gees, cause everyone likes that. Oh, hey, now everyone's a little buzzed. I'll put Dean Martin on. And hey, now it's the end of the party, we'll close it down with Willie Nelson. Like, I just kind of knew that as a young kid, just because it was always there.
Yeah.
And then, but I didn't know, because I grew up on this ranch, about, like, I didn't know about, like, AC/DC or Led Zeppelin or any of that stuff until, like, seriously, like, eighth grade. And I remember this kid, my mom, she was hanging out with this other divorced mother, and I went to this kid's house and I was like, hey, man, like, what do you want to do? You remember, like, when you go to someone's house?
Was,
like,
he your buddy or the moms knew?
It was the moms knew each other.
Dude, I mean, look, failed to bring this up, but my folks split when I was 10, but it was just my mom 10. And I, seventh grade through high school, right? So you're becoming best friends and enemies with your mom, because it's that pivotal point as a kid where you're like, I feel like I'm becoming a man at this stage, but also you, like, need your mom, like, you still, so you're very much like, I'd be like, you know, mom, can you, like, wash my basketball jersey tonight and then, like, make my lunch early because I'm gonna have to leave, but then also give me space because I'm a man, you know. So you're finding that balance. But so many places that we would go to, like, she's like, we're gonna go to my friend Carol's place, she's got a son, he's a couple years older than you, and, like, sometimes you they would always put you in a position to, at least like that other mom prepped, you know, yeah. her kid on me, probably being like, look, he loves Pop-Tarts, you're he fucking totally, loves Space Jam.
Dude, you're guys. Totally describing this night.
And sometimes you match up and sometimes you don't. But yeah. like, guess what? 90, I feel like 7% of the time, because dudes are good at that at every age range, I feel like, to just kind of
we'll just figure it
become
out.
Buds yeah. somehow. We'll what figure it out. Into? Like, what are you into?
Well, and this is the thing that's crazy about it, it was that you the way you described it, Adam, is so true. There was this moment in time when, like, you know, like, hey, we're going to, mom and her friend are going to talk about how much they hate men and your fathers. And the two of you who look
celebrate men,
the yeah. two of you who look exactly like the people we hate right. are going to go in another room.
Yeah.
You know, because I look like my dad. I used to always yeah. joke when my mom would get mad at my dad, because mm-hmm. I think I learned how to manage bands too by dealing, because my mom and dad for years would not talk to each other. And I was the go-to. It was like
you
I
were peer mediator.
Oh, it was Mick and wow. it was Mick and Keith, dude, and I was Charlie Watts. I was like, my mom, you tell that. Your father that I need, and I go, hey, and Dad, you would. I gotta talk. Mom says, you know, yeah. and then, well, you know what, Joe, I'm gonna tell you something right now. Can you talk to your mother? I go, hey, mom,
oh my god, Dad at said, what age?
Oh, 10, dude.
Wow,
jeez, I think that's the reason why I was so when I managed bands. I always was.
You knew how to manage personalities.
I knew how, like, hey, man, I know you don't want to hear this right now, but we got it. Dude, you tell him right. that I am not even going to do that song ever again. Hey, man, he's saying he wants to do it, but not that's maybe tonight. You know, like, yeah, you know, like, you just.
You kind of bend the truth a little bit, but yeah. you adjust to.
Yeah, the before you know it, they're doing the song, and you're like, I got what I needed. You know, yeah. everyone's happy.
Yeah, but as for. And the kid version of that is, before you know it, we're going to McDonald's, and I'm getting ice cream and a burger, yeah. right? Like. How yeah. often would you have to peer mediate?
Well, you know, but I would say the thing that was great about my parents, at least, it was that they were both so independent and so individual, and they never bagged on each other. Like, there was never like, you know, I hate your father or anything like that. It was more things like, you know, if your dad needs you to be there on this weekend, I'm going to tell you right now, tell him he's need to be. Okay, cool. Hey, mom says, you know, it was a lot of that stuff. It was never like financial things or anything right. like that, or even divorce stuff. Right. It was more like, it was just, I was the middleman between yes. the two of them.
Yeah.
And
it's easier sometimes, you know?
Yeah, it was.
And you probably recognize, like, look, this is probably keeping things kosher a little bit more than
they were together. When they were together, it wasn't good. But when my dad and mom split, it was easy to be the mediator, because it just was simpler. And my mom had her life and my dad had his. But this one particular time yeah. where I'm in like seventh grade or whatever, and this is before Skateboard Park, or I'm still listening only to my parents' music. And
what again?
Oh, this is like Village People. You know, whatever was being played on the radio, sure. you know.
Pop music.
Elton John, pop yeah. music. Like, I was like, oh. Like
that's good stuff.
All the stuff I even though when I got into punk, I never was a dude that was like, I like Crass or like, you know, like, or Discharge. Like, I liked Minor Threat. They were a hardcore band, but they had great songs. I loved 7 Seconds. Why? They have songs. Like, I always was a song guy. Even if the yeah. song was a minute long, there's a chorus. I love it. When I ended up this one kid, I'm at that stage, Adam, that you're talking about. Like, I'm still like, I'm playing basketball. I got, you know, like, I don't know, like, that my head's bigger than the rest of my body. Like, I'm at that part where I'm like, what the fuck am I doing yeah, in my yeah. life?
Right.
And I'm sitting there, and I remember I say to the kid, I'm like, hey, man, you want to go out and play basketball? And he's a year older, like you said. And he's like, nah, dude, what are you talking about? And I'm like, and he's cool. And he's like, I remember I went in his room, dude, and he had like a lava lamp. And I was like, wow, like, my cousin has a lava lamp. And he's like 20, you know? And then I'll never forget this, dude. This is how weird it was. He goes, hey, man, you want to listen to some music? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, how? They're like, yeah. Like, and he had a stereo, dude, with like the thing, like, you know, the light that shows when the stereo's going around yes. and yes. like knobs. And like, yeah. this wasn't a stereo. This was like the commands to yeah. a spaceship.
Not just bass and treble.
Yeah.
Like everything.
Like, this is yours? And he's like, yeah. And he had like a needle. And I'm like not that kind of, you know, like a needle. Sorry. You know, like
record needle.
Yeah, a record. And it's like, I'm sitting there. I'll never forget it, dude. He says, what do you want to listen to, man? And I don't know. And he gives me AC/DC, If You Want Blood. And the cover of that, if you look at it and you flip it over, has Angus with the guitar through, it's a live album, and it has like the guitar stock through his body, and he's laying mm-hmm. on the stage. Okay, dude, I thought it was fucking real.
Yeah,
I was like, there's a fucking murder scene on the back of this album cover.
Yeah,
and I'll never forget, man, I just stared at that, and he puts that on, and I'm like, holy shit. And then the game changer was, he puts on Van Halen 1, Running with the Devil. And I remember he cranks it up, dude, and it fucking phased me, dude. It was like, I did, and I remember this, dude. We sat in that bedroom for fucking the whole night, and the next day we never left. And when I left, he had turned me on to everything from, you know, the Stones to Led Zeppelin to, you know, AC/DC to everything in between. And I remember I went back to school that on, so that was on a Saturday and it's a Sunday. And I go, oh my God, this is going to be so great. When I go back to school, I'm going to see my new friend.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't realize this, but the reason that we went over there was because him and his mom had decided she's leaving Santa Cruz. I've never seen this kid again in my entire life. I went that day to Monday. I go, where's, you know, where is he? And I'm looking around. They go, oh, am I? And they go, oh no, he transferred. He's no longer here.
He never existed.
Yeah,
he was a figment of your imagination.
Yeah, but it was a full moment where like this kid schooled me. Oh, dude, so great.
So this is the song that got you into music. Oh,
yeah, right here.
And AC/DC is my favorite band. So dude,
Bon Scott era. Yeah. I mean, right here when it kicks in. So great. Phil Rudd on drums, Cliff on bass. You got Malcolm on rhythm, Angus. And right here when Bond comes in. So tough. Here we go. Little Joe. What?
What's criminal?
Yeah, what
kid?
Law? What law?
Older kid?
Yeah.
Wow.
Why do I want to kiss my bro right now? Like right? You're just like, let's take our shirts off. All right, yeah.
I have pent-up aggression and I don't know why.
Yeah.
Have you seen them live?
Anarchy.
Oh, dude. I've seen AC/DC. I saw him with. I never saw him with Bon Scott, but I saw him. Yeah. I obviously saw him with Malcolm. I saw him with Phil. I saw all the Brian Johnson. You know, I saw him Cow Palace. Yeah. I remember I saw him at the Cow Palace twice. I remember when I took my son to the last show that Brian Johnson ever played, AC/DC Dodger Stadium.
Wow. Really?
That was Brian Johnson's last show, because then afterwards they booted him.
Now he's deaf.
Yeah.
Or now he's...
Yeah. When we went down to do comedy, Jim Brewer, you know, I feature for Brewer, and he's, you know, AC/DC God,
that's like...
Maniac.
You and him on a show, that's just a rock show.
Yeah, it is.
That's rock and roll comedy.
All he wants to talk about, dude, is music.
Yeah.
That's all.
Why?
No, he just...
Well, because he's talking about everything else in his act, probably. So yeah, about it.
No, what I'm saying is, like, if you're hanging out with Brewer, he just wants to... He wants to talk about music. Like, he's not, like... It's the thing that's... He's like us. He's just a bro that wants to talk about music, that wants to hang out, and he's into new jams, and he's into, like, oh, dude, we got to listen to this. We got to... Like, and when we went down to Florida, he was like, look, when we go down to Florida, we're going to be Sarasota. And I'm, you know, and he goes, there's a chance that Brian Johnson might come. And I go, I was like, dude, are you fucking serious?
Because they all know and love him, yeah?
They're tight. He goes, I go, what's it like if
he opens for Metallica sometimes?
He goes, what will it be like if we get to meet Brian Johnson? And then he has the best, you know, Brian Johnson accent. He goes, you'll just end up at his house and you won't understand anything that he says to you and you'll be drinking scotch. And I was like, oh my God, I want that so bad. And then of course the night that we got there, I'm like, you know,
this could be it.
I don't want to bother him. You know, yeah. Like, hey, is Brian Johnson coming? And then his wife ended up coming because Brian was over in like London. But I was still like, oh my God, Brian Johnson's wife's here. That's rad.
You fuck Brian Johnson.
Dude.
Yeah. What's it like?
Describe his dick.
Wait, how did you become buds with Brewer?
Brewer was on my buddy Chris Shiflett, who's in the Foo Fighters. He does a podcast called Walk in the Room or Walk in the Floor. It's Walk in the Room or Walk in the Floor. Wait, which one was Greg Barron's podcast? Is his Walk in the Floor?
I don't know.
Anyway, you can search. Yeah, you looked that up.
Wait, so anyway, which guitarist is...
So Chris is the...
I know, because I've seen Foo Fighters.
Yeah, you've seen him a million times.
And you Dave came to our show in Australia.
I was just going to tell you, you've had to have met my buddy Chris.
Is he the short blonde kid?
Short blonde hair.
Okay, yeah, he's amazing.
He's the guy that, he's the lead guitar player for Foo Fighters.
Oh, he's unbelievable.
Yeah, he's a ripper. He was in my band. Him and I were both in 22 Jacks together.
Holy shit.
We were both in 22 Jacks together. He was my first roommate. He's the first roommate I meet in LA, and or like the first, not the first guy, but like one of the second dudes that I meet when I move to LA.
I gotta start listening to this podcast.
They have Chris
Stapleton on there and Manny Pacquiao.
Yeah, what's the name of it?
What?
Yeah, what's the name of the podcast?
Walking the Floor.
I'm gonna tell you right now, it's a great podcast.
Wow.
Yeah. Dude, Pacquiao's on, it's amazing.
Wait, so
Pacquiao?
Yeah, he got him.
Have you seen them a bunch live then? Yeah, for sure.
Tons.
What do you, because I think the Foo Fighters are some of the last true just rock stars through and through
yeah.
that are still like have the energy to, I mean, the way Dave works that stage is mind blowing to me. Dude. And the fact that they'll do 3.5 hour plus shows
and,
with
and
an encore
all over the world.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
For me, what I love about the, I mean, the Foo Fighters for me, I
as also a rocker, like what do you vibe off of when you see them?
I mean,
what do you appreciate?
I mean, the thing that I love about the Foo Fighters is just what you said, is that, you know what I love about the Foo Fighters? I'll tell you, I love the Foo Fighters that an hour before their show, they're pounding beers. Yeah. They're doing shots. I hope I'm not, you know,
no,
I mean, yeah. I know there's guys in the band that don't, but I'm telling you right now, like, I love the fact that, that Grohl is backstage. I remember one time I went to the Forum to see them, and I tell this story on stage all the time because my wife used to give me so much shit about drinking Coors Lights. And I you know, you got a pool. I want to drink 30 Coors Lights so I can still talk to people.
Yeah.
You know, and you
so
can.
So you don't need anything that's like 50% alcohol.
Exactly.
Or two drinks and you're gone.
Yeah, then I'm gone. I'm falling Coors Light. So I'm drinking Coors Lights. But she's always saying, you know, why do you drink Coors Light? You know, she, all right, whatever. So this one night, Chris, they're playing the Forum. And that's just a trip in its own because,
I know.
You know, Chris is the first guy, I come to LA. I don't know anybody, dude. I'm 24 years old. I just got kicked out of my band. And I end up, this one dude knows me down here and he sees me out one night and he's like, hey man, you used to sing for Frontline, right? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, what are you doing down here now? I moved here. And he's like, hey dude, I'm starting a band. And at that point I'm like, all right. And I don't really know this guy, but like, he goes, you know, I got a rehearsal studio. I'm like, okay. I go over, we write some jams. And then he's, you know, I'm like, I'm not really, like, he's, you know, I'm not like grooving 100%. I'm still in like I'm still in the mode of like, am I gonna stay in LA? I got kicked out of my band, so I can't go up north. And my girlfriend bailed on me and is already together with like another dude.
Oh,
and like they're moving into each other. Like called the house. Like I went for the like, hey, I just want to, hello. Oh hey, what's up? Oh yeah.
Oh.
And then like he's like, hey bro, I don't want to be lame, but like I live here now. And I'm like,
oh.
And you know that mode. Where and then you apologize. Sorry, my
yeah,
bad.
Sorry. Yeah. I'm calling my ex girl. Yeah. And you're living there.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Like, my stuff's still there.
And then you didn't become a country music star after that, because that's
Did you go back to get your stuff?
No. But it was just that moment where she's just like. It's not
so
really
now
that.
It's just overwhelmingly
I remember I called my mom, dude, a true story. I called my mom. I was 23 at this point. I was living over on my bro's couch, and I'm living on his couch, and he just went for this, he goes, hey dude, there's nothing going on for you anymore in San Jose. Come down to LA and you can stay on my couch for one month, and after that you're on your own. And I'm like, okay. And I remember I came down, he was working at this record label called Slash, my friend Brian Ray. If it wasn't for him, I wouldn't be here. Brian Ray, Adam Ray. And so he goes, yeah, you can stay on my couch. I remember the first night I go to his house, you guys, he's having a party and he had like real furniture and like a real girlfriend and like a real, like not roommates. Like I was used to like, yeah, dude, 20 dudes live in the same room, right? No,
right.
Like it was like set up. And I remember the first time I go to his house, it's a party with like Jane's Addiction, the guys in Fishbone. I'm like, is that really Perry? Like it was like Hollywood happening. And I remember I'm there and I'm like, okay, I got to figure out what I'm going to do. And I end up meeting, you know, running into Chris, or I'm sorry, I meet this guy and I'm jamming with. And the first time we get together, like, all right, we're going to get a drummer and we're going to run these songs with another guy on bass. And I remember I'm sitting there, you know, sleeping on this guy's couch. But at this point, I'm like staring out the window at this rehearsal studio, like, oh my God, where am I at in my life? Like, okay. And I remember this little truck pulls up and this guy gets out and he's this little dude and he has like a tie on and a collared shirt. Kind of like, you know what someone would wear like if they worked at Kinko's?
Yeah.
Like, you know, kind of like, okay, this is my day clothes. Yeah. And he immediately like got out of his truck and he like put on the shirt and he's like, all right, puts on his, you know, tennis Vans. And he's like, and I'm like, oh, fuck, check that dude out. And I could just like, oh, that's cool. Like, you know, and then I'm like, he comes upstairs and the guy that I was jamming was like, hey man, this is Chris. And I'm like, what's up? And immediately I was just like, oh my God, like he's not sketch. Like it was, so, you know what I'm saying? When you move to Hollywood, like you got to find your people, you know, like, you know, like he's not, I could tell like he's kind of like probably from like where I'm from, like, you know, sure enough, Santa Barbara, surf culture, skateboarder. I'm like, awesome. We start jamming with this guy. It doesn't go anywhere. We end up becoming friends. I find out that he's not even a bass player. He's really, I'm like, why are you playing bass? Like, I'm a guitar player. I'm like, wow. Okay. You know, I'm like, why are you playing bass? Like, you know, just trying to get something off the ground. I mean, that's where he was. And I remember we just became friends. We started drinking beers together, hanging out, and then all of a sudden it just led to, we were roommates. And then he was, and then when I was in this band called Wax, and then we went on the road, and he'd never been on the road. And I said, dude, you should come with us and be like, you'll be like on the road with us and you can tech for us. So like his first time on the road was, you know, helping with guitars, and we were on tour with the Boss Tones, and we just had such, we had our own.
The Mighty Mighty Boss Tones?
Mighty Mighty Boss Tones. That was our first big tour.
Is there any other kind of Boss Tone?
Yeah. And it was so amazing. So, you know, fast forward to all of a sudden, to, you know, when your bro is playing the Forum,
that's crazy.
It's and so and open, like,
and
like
you're flashing back to all those old times, crashing on couches and fans,
and also like, and also a guy that you shared the stage with, and a guy that you always knew was way better than you. I mean, Chris was always, we always knew, like when he got the gig. Like I remember when he got the when the whole thing went down with him auditioning for the Fears, he was the first guy to try out. And what had happened was, I was out in New York. I was flying to New York. I landed in New York. Chris was coming out to New York for some reason. And a buddy of mine, this guy named Todd Youth, who played in all these hardcore bands, he just passed away. But back then he comes up to me and we're on a corner in New York. He's smoking. He goes, bro, dude, you hear about the Foo Fighters? And I'm like, what's up? And he's like, dude, fuck, last night fucking Franz left, dude. They need a new fucking guitar player. And I'm like, really? And I'm sitting there, I'm like, wow. And my first thing is, oh, well, Todd's going to do it.
Yeah.
I go, so you're going to do it, Todd? He goes, fuck that, dude. I'm fucking joining Danzig. And I'm like, are you serious? And he's like, yeah. He's all, I'm going out, fucking Glenn, I'm going to be in Danzig. I'm like, are you serious? And he goes, yeah. And he's one of these type of guys, Todd, love him to death. I was like, I had to say to him, I go, dude, is it lame if like a buddy I know tried? He goes, no, man, fucking cool, bro. Go call him. And this is back in the day, pre-cell phone. I have to run back to the house I'm staying at. Now, this is where it gets crazy. God. My best friend who I started Side One Dummy with, Bill Armstrong, he knew like the attorney or assistant to the attorney or something like that in the Foo Fighters camp. Now you gotta remember, the Foo Fighters aren't where they are now. They're still like first record style, you know, or maybe second record.
Wow.
So he called, I go, dude, did you hear about this? And he goes, dude, fucking, I heard all about it. And I go, dude, I just ran into Todd Youth. They say they're gonna audition guitar players. And we both go, fuck, dude, Chris is the dude. Like, that's how great of a guitar player we, like, it wasn't like, you know, Bill's a guitar player. He wasn't like, hey, maybe, like, we just knew. We're like, it was this, we were like, dude, what else if Chris got an audition? That would be fucking sick. So then we, you know, one thing leads to another. And I remember Bill calls me back, and the lawyer person, the woman who set it all up, the last thing she said to Bill was, I'm going out on a limb for you. Are you sure this guy can pull it? Like, I don't know if he's going to get it, but please do not.
Don't make me look stupid.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I remember I get on the phone with Chris. I'm like, dude. And I pretty much remember it. Like, he's like, dude, I'm going in for the audition. I go, are you serious? And he goes, yeah. And I go, do me a, I go, dude, you know what you got to do? You got to learn. Like, he goes, yeah, they've given me this many songs to learn. I go, dude, learn more. Like, you have an ear that can remember everything. He's like, yeah, you're right. Or, you know, he probably was like already thinking that. And then I remember we get back to LA, and dude, at this point, he's just a dude that was living in San Francisco in a truck, and
yeah,
you know, he's just hanging out, and he doesn't have a place to stay in LA, so he's sleeping on my Bill's couch. And all of a sudden he goes down, he auditions, he's the first guy. They run a bunch of songs, and you know, and I've heard, you know, even Dave say it, they were done and they were like, dude, like, you nailed it, but we got to try these other people out, thank you so much. Okay, they try everyone else out. That night, Bill, my partner, he says the phone rings, and he answers it, and he knows it's Dave. He's like, hey, is Chris there? And Chris gets on the phone. He's like, hey, man. I'm like, yeah, that'd be cool. All right, I'll meet you guys. Goes up, hangs out with them that night, comes back to the pad after hanging out with them at night. We're like, dude, what's it like? Like, are they cool?
Yeah, that's part of the process, right? It's like, dude, you rock the hang? Music part. Can you hang?
Can you
Which, hang? By the way, is why Brewer probably eventually was like bringing you out, because it's like with any just opener or
comedy,
just
music,
right? Anything. You gotta, the hang is it's just like they an
essential
say, it's part.
Like TJ Miller says on Crashing to Pete Holmes, hey man, you know, he's like, I don't want to drink. He's like, dude, you gotta, like, it's, if you're gonna feature, it's all about the hang. You gotta have, you know, it's, we always used to say, a lot of people have been in bands not because they're talented. It's not what they do on stage for 40 minutes. It's how they play the van or the bus for 23 hours. Like, there's a lot of people that have had great careers in music that probably aren't that cool, that aren't so talented, but they're just a cool hang. You know, like, dude, you know, like look at Van Halen. You know, is Michael Anthony, like, was he probably, you know, he looked like he could have been doing sheet wall, you know, construction. But they were like, this guy's a great hang and he can sing. Let's go. You know, like, but the thing that ended up happening was he hung, And then he went
back and
he goes back
and
jams with him and goes back and jams with him again. And then I remember, like, I hope I'm getting the story. Like, I just remember, I mean, I do remember, like, we were all like hanging and like we're waiting. And it was so rad because, like, Chris having the audition was all of us. Like, this was like our guy. And we all felt like we, it was, there was no weirdness. We wanted him to get this gig. And then he gets a phone call at the house again. Now you gotta remember, he doesn't live here anymore. You know, he's just staying right on the couch like all of us have done. He's lived in LA, but at this point he's living in San Francisco. He's in between gigs. He's jamming with one band. He's playing here.
Just doing the musician grind.
He's,
playing,
he's working at Fat Records. You know, he's kind of, you know, he's, but everyone knew like he's way too talented to do that. And then Grohl calls him up and the story goes, because Bill was there. It's like, Chris is like, hello. And he's like, hey, yeah. He's like, yeah, totally. All right. And he hangs up and he goes, what the, what'd he say? He goes, dude, Grohl's like, dude, are you busy for like the next, you know, the next 2 years? You want to go on tour? Let's do this. Come up to the Chateau Marmont, pick out a fucking place to stay. Let's hang. And then he fucking left. Rest is history.
Wow. Oh my fucking
like,
God.
Seriously,
dude.
Like,
and now just, you're in the Foo Fighters.
And are you ready for this? The thing that was so fucking cool about the whole thing was they immediately did a show with Chris in LA. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget as long as I live. Every fucking bro, every friend came to the, it was at the Troubadour and it was so rad, dude. It was so like, it's just silly to use, but this is the word. It was cute. Like, we were all on Chris's side of the stage. Yeah, and Dave must have been like, I'm talking like, it was the Troubadour and it was intimate. Sold out. But like, literally, you know, it was sold out, like, you know, safe sold out, you know, not like, you know,
not,
like, yeah.
Fire hazard.
Yeah, you know, yeah, like you can move around. And we were, it was like the whole side of Chris's stage for his first show, all of us standing there. And then we had a party back at my house and everyone, we stayed up all night. And we were celebrating harder than he was that he was in the band.
That's
and then it just turned into, you know, so when they played the Forum,
and now you never see him ever again.
I ran, you know, it's funny is that when we went to when Brewer and I were out with Metallica, we both were in Milwaukee.
Okay.
And it was so great because we went, like, they were playing Milwaukee the night after and Metallica was playing that night. So like Grohl and Taylor and all those guys came to the show the night of that. And then the next night they played. But Chris, you know, just, and back to the Coors Light thing, just if someone's like, how did he get on the Coors Light thing? But the thing that was funny was when Chris did, like, the thing I love when you said, this is what you said, like, why do you love the band? Because when they headlined the Forum, they had a private room that was like, say, the size, like, you know, it wasn't a little room, it was a big room. And they I'll never forget, dude, this is before the show. And we were all, like, people that were invited, you go, and it was like, okay, so the circle of all the friends, we're all in the room, right? But in the room is everybody. And DJing in the room is Lemmy from Motorhead. Now, this is before the show, you guys. This is before the show. Like you walk in there and you're like, oh my God. And everyone's raging. And I remember it was a full bar. And like, it's like they're raging so hard. Lemmy's spinning music. And I remember I'm like, oh, I want to get some beers. And I look around and there's this shitty styrofoam cooler that just said Grohl on the top. And I'm like the kind you take to the beach. You know, it's like, whatever. And I go to open it and inside, Coors Lights. And I just start pounding Coors Lights. Dave's pounding Coors Lights.
Yeah.
I'll never forget the tour manager.
Gus.
At a certain point, Gus.
Yeah.
Gus comes in.
Yeah.
Gus comes in. He's like, guys, we got to play the Forum. We're late. Like, and they're in, they're raging so hard with everybody that they didn't want the party to end.
Right.
And they're like, all right, guys. Like, okay, yeah, you're right. We got to get our shit together. You know? And I just look over and there's Crown Royal going down. And I was like, this is a rock band. Like, I love that they were having fun.
On and off stage, you know?
I loved it. And just good people.
Yeah.
Good, absolutely. Good people.
How do you feel that grind in music, like, that that you've gone through and that all your buddies have gone through? Like, how do you feel like that's prepped you for the comedy grind? And how different are they?
They're different. The thing I miss from being in a band is I don't like when I have to travel by myself.
Yeah.
There's a lot of alone time and I don't, that's only, you know what I'm saying? You know, like, you know, like when we're at the club and you're headlining and you're like, great. And you're in that room by yourself and then you're at the hotel by yourself.
Yep.
And then, like, you know, I mean, I know you guys have features. So, you know, you bring someone that you love, you know, Sandy, he's a fucking great hand.
Yeah. It's perfect.
Know?
Yeah.
It's the best. So there's always that kind of moment where you're like, that was the only thing, like, you know, like the thing I love about featuring for Brewer is that, you know, from the moment we get to the airport till the moment we both go, you know, he flies to Long Island and I fly to fucking California. We're joking around and we're just it's like, it's just, we're having fun. And like, you know, he rents, you know, he'll rent a car. Like, oh, we got to do this. Or, you know, on the Metallica tour, you know, we're on a bus together. So it's like, we're just fucking around laughing and just making each other laugh the whole time. And I love that because it feels like being in a band. Whereas I love that about being in a band. I just used to love, like, you know, there is that moment, like when when you have to go and you get in the Uber and it's dark out and you're at LAX, it's just sad.
Yeah.
And you don't know why you're sad, but then all of a sudden you see Brad and you're like, dude, okay, I'm not sad anymore.
Even if it's 6 a.m.
Even if, exactly. Yeah.
But I run into comics, like, cause we're all going out that day. We're all going out on the Thursday. So you do the Thursday night show and do Friday morning press. Yeah. So you go to the American Airlines terminal, any flight to Dallas, like 6 a.m. on a Thursday, there's going to be a couple comics on
it. And
it also makes the gig more fun when you've got that hang building up to it, right?
And you know what? I think you're funnier. Like, for me, I think I know, like, a lot of times, like, if I do a gig and I go with my wife, I have a shitty set. Because on the way, I know what I mean? And I love her to death.
Yeah, man.
Because she goes, why are you playing the music so loud? Really? Or we, you know, why do we have... all right, and, you know, and then I'll go. I mean, I'm getting ready for the gig. Oh man! And she, whoa! Why are you talking so loud? And you're like, babe, like, you know, like, but like, if I'm with you guys and we had a gig and we're like right now, like, if I had to do a set after hanging out with you guys here, I know I'm going to have a good time because you're already prepped.
Yes, I mean, podcasting, hanging, like, it is a great example of this. I was doing the first and only couch I've done was Craig Ferguson, right? And Santino, Andrew Santino at the time, he goes, hey, let me come with. And I go, yeah, I'm just kind of nervous. I think I'm going to be in my head. He goes, dude, let me come with because we'll hang and just I'll ease the pressure of it all and we'll shoot the shit. And then, like, it'll carry over into when you go out there. I was like, well, that's fucking brilliant.
That's
I didn't think of that. And then so we kind of did that, and it definitely helped.
Absolutely.
And he just kept me loose fucking around. And then even they had a little bar in there, and he goes, take a little shot of whiskey with me. I go, I can't be fucked up out there. He goes, one tiny shot of whiskey is going to fuck you up. And I go, all right. And he goes, all it's going to do is calm the nerves. The smallest little thing, but a little bit on my lips. And it was just like, and not that that was the reason that it went well, but it was like,
no, but
it did kind of just, you know what I'm saying? Like, having somebody around you to kind of bounce off
But what I think ends up happening, and this was the mistake, like, I would make a lot when I was in a band. Like, one thing I learned from being in a band was that I tend to take something that's fun so seriously that I stop making it fun. Like, I've been kicked out of two bands. Like, not like, hey, maybe it's not working out. Like, we do not want to play music with you anymore. Please. Like, at one point, one band just took all their gear and didn't even tell me that I was kicked out. Like, I thought it got stolen. I literally went down to the studio and this is the first band I was kicked out of. And I was like, dude, I called our guitar player. Oh, shit got stolen. It's gone. And he's like, bro, we don't want to play with you anymore. It didn't get stolen. We just took it all. And I'm like, oh, is that why my PA and mic phone still? Yeah.
Like, that's why your stuff is still there.
Yeah. Like, the burglars didn't come in and just take our stuff and not yours. You know, I had to learn at a young age, I'm a very, like, I can be super focused and super, like, we got to make it happen. And that's like, later on in my life, that's been great because, you know, running a record label, I'm great. Like, I was really good at making all the shit I wanted to have happen for me. For other artists, you know, like, I would fight, like, fist to cuffs over Flogging Molly, Gaslight Anthem, Go Go Birdello, Title Fight. Like, any band I ever signed, I was like, I will fucking, like, my partner and I used to say, we only sign a band if we would literally follow the band behind them in their van selling the record. If push came to shove, would you follow them around selling it out of the back of our cars? Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. If we have that commitment, then we sign you.
And good job on Gaslight Anthem.
Thank you.
They're one of my favorite bands.
Yeah. And one of the best.
Yeah.
Brian Fallon
Benny. Is amazing.
I just did, you know, they did their 10-year anniversary on 59 Sound, and it was crazy because when I started stand up and doing storytelling and spoken word and all that, Brian Fallon was one of the biggest supporters. And he...
No shit.
And he, to the point, like, where he did his own show at the Troubadour, and he was like, I want you to open. And I was like, what? And it was just me and him. It was great. I'm going to sneeze.
By the way, Brian, bless you, Brian Fallon, not to be confused with Brian Callen.
There you go.
Yeah. Everyone's way like, different guy.
Yeah. Totally different
Very
guy.
Very different guy.
But the thing I would say, though, like the similarities, just, you know, I loved being in a band, and it was amazing. And there was things I loved about it. I loved the camaraderie. I loved the gang aspect of it. I loved just all of us hit the stage, the great, the funness, that what we love of the Foo Fighters. You know, you all go out and they just, you know, they crush it. I loved all of that. But in comedy, you know, the stand-up part of it, what I do love so much is I love how instant it is, in the sense that when you're working on music and you're collaborating with people, you know, you have to be respectful of each other. Like, you can't just say to the band, "Hey man, you know, let's do this jam tonight," or "Hey, let's work on this." You know, you kind of have a foundation you have to work upon. And what I love about stand-up is you guys, you know, we can come up with a bit in the car today, kind of flush it out in your head, you know, maybe say it to ourselves, maybe do this, but tonight we could do a set, and and all night, all day long, you're like, I can't wait to say these 16 words together to see if it gets a laugh. Yeah. And when it does, you're like, fuck, a new bit. And you're just like, it's okay. And it just all of a sudden, but we're in a band, you can't really go,
you gotta wait for that immediate result.
You have to be like, hey guys, we got a jam, and then we gotta like flush it out, and then someone has to say, I really don't like it, and then you have to say, what do you mean? You know, you always, you know, and then there's
And there's beauty in that process too.
Yeah, no,
but
there
it's
is.
A different, I mean, come it on, just, man. There's something really unique and special about being like,
absolutely,
here's a thought, and it's gonna, like, I get to, you know.
And I played, I mean, the two bands that I was in that did well, you know, Wax and especially, you know, especially Wax and especially 22 Jacks.
By the way, and just for the listeners, if you're like, I don't know those bands, you
and I'm
know,
sure you don't.
You know Wax. You just don't know that you know Wax.
You've seen and heard Wax.
You have one of the greatest music videos of all time.
Thank you.
For
California.
California, directed by Spike Jonze, where a guy runs down the street on fire in slow motion.
Yes.
You've seen the video. You've heard the song.
Yes.
Okay.
It's called the Man on Fire video, I think, now.
Yeah.
It's in like every documentary about cinematography and film. Yeah.
It's just a slow motion. The whole video is just a guy running slow motion on fire.
Yeah. He ran by
it's perfect.
It's a 2 minute. It's a 2 minute and 24 second video of a guy running by that. I think he ran by in like 17 seconds or 18 seconds.
Yeah.
Slew it down. And it was shot right on Gardner.
Wow.
Right down the street from here.
Yeah, so you guys know
they closed Sunset Boulevard.
To shoot it?
Dude, I'll never... This is when music was happening. Like, can I... Like, just for anybody that's listening, you're going to trip out because you're like, what? Okay, we get signed to Interscope Records for $400,000. And our video budget was, I think, $500,000. We got signed on a... We had gotten dropped... We had gotten like, and the only reason, I don't want anyone to be like, okay, you think you're rad because you got signed for 400. No, it wasn't that. It was just the craziness that there was that kind of cash that could be thrown around at 11 p.m. at a building on Wilshire. Like, it's just nuts, you know? And it was, we had gotten dropped. Our first record came out on Virgin, and it was like when like, you know, it's early, like Pearl Jam and Drop 19s and Smashing Pumpkins are happening. Punk rock hadn't happened again, the second or third wave.
Right.
Like Rancid hadn't happened yet. Green Day hadn't happened. So when we turned in our second record, you know, it was we were inspired by the Replacements. We loved Husker Du. We loved the Ramones.
Keanu Reeves movie or no?
No, but like we were into all those indie bands.
Yes.
And that wasn't really happening. It was more rock. And then a year, 2 years later, all of a sudden, you know, Rancid and Green Day and that next wave of punk rock happened. So when we got dropped, we went through a 2 year span where we were just, that's how I started the record label. I started Side One Dummy because Wax got dropped, and I was living with my partner Bill, and I was like, dude, I got to do something. He's like, well, look, I'm like, we should start a label. He's like, let's do it together. We started that. That's what, I just wanted to put out my own band. But when my band got added to K-Rock, and that was at a time where if you got a song on K-Rock,
it was over,
dude. It was,
all right, I mean, Rodney, dude, on the Rock Show.
It was so
okay. So we're gonna do a Wax.
Wax, hey,
Wax is a godhead.
Cool, man. Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. Hey. So I saw these guys at Denny's where I eat lunch. Okay. So, all right. Are there any people that want to hear it? Okay, cool.
No, yeah. Great video. Guy runs down the street
on fire.
He's on fire. So everybody. This is California.
Dude, you sound like him.
Was getting a song on K-Rock comparable to like a set on Carson?
Absolutely. At that time, it would change your career overnight.
Is this song Wax?
Wow.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so like I said, you've heard of Wax.
Dude, fuck yeah.
You just don't know that you have. And there's a guy running on the street on fire.
Yeah.
Are you one of the few people to have both a rock album and a comedy album?
I don't know. Am I?
I mean, it's got to be.
I would look up that stat. That's pretty impressive.
Wow.
And Nowhere Near the Top is the name of your album.
Yeah, Nowhere Near the Top. Just yes.
And you talk about being being this punk rock dad. You talk about like staying true to your roots, but then still having these kids and
they wreck me.
Yeah, and it's got to be so crazy. There's got to be so many times when your kid does something, says something, and then you go, you don't understand. I've lived this and more.
Yeah,
I've done all of this.
Yeah, I think the hardest thing is when you're saying to your kid, you got to take it seriously. You got to, you know, why would you do that? And then he just pulls up a video of you with a mohawk stage diving and no shirt on. Or there's a video of me in Austin or Dallas, Texas, throwing beer all over the audience, pushing security into the crowd. You know, and he's just like, okay, so wait a minute. So you're telling me I not to do A, B, and C, but yet, and you're just like, oh my gosh, how do I explain to him? And then you're almost like, you're right. I just don't want, you know, when it's your, the only thing you want for your kid is you just don't want them to get hurt permanently. Like you're just like, dude, check it out. Let's not bust any tattoos or like do anything that will permanently put you behind bars or in a wheelchair. You know, like let's, and that's the only thing. Like the rest of it is broken bones and bruises. Yeah. You're okay.
That's my biggest
thing. But a lot of times my son and I will butt heads because, you know, he'll be like, he'll say to me like, Dad, you're telling me like you're friends with the guys in Jackass, like, you know, like why, like they're your bros, but yet I can't do it. And you're just like, oh my gosh,
I don't know how I'm ever going to figure that balance out. Like if I become a dad, like just that, I mean, of like
scrub the internet.
Here's right. I mean, it's even
now.
I mean,
now they're gonna be able to pull up tweets and posts and videos that you made like when you were 15.
Oh, my nieces have been already YouTubing things of me and been like, what is that? Why'd you say that?
Yeah.
And like some things they'll be like, this was funny.
What's a cum dumpster, Uncle Adam?
Okay, like, well, not my bit. It's a Seinfeld bit. Everybody knows that.
Sure.
That's a Seinfeld bit.
I can attest from seeing you since you started, man, you have become like a really, really good comic.
Like, really funny, man. You dive into it. You do everything. Like,
but you put in the work and you like grind it with shows, which is, you know, you create your own good luck and there's no, it's not, Brewer didn't just bring you on the road because of the hang. He's like, oh, cool. Like, you're also going to crush, you know?
Well, you know.
That matters.
Yeah. No, I mean, it means a lot you saying that because when we started this coming in here, I was laughing because, you know, I'm driving over here and I remember when I met you, it was literally right, like it was the month I started.
Yeah.
And I remember it was Darren who booked the Laugh Factory.
Yeah.
And we were doing, I got talked into, but I was like hosting a show and I was there and I did not know what I was doing. And I remember, she goes, yeah, you got to meet Adam Ray. You know, he'd be great. And I had this little, like, we were doing this like online, like TV show.
Yeah.
And it was cool.
Yeah.
And, you know, and like people were into it.
It was cool. You had a lot of
Yeah, it was a cool little thing. And we had all the lights and the cameras.
I remember reading a bunch of comments in the day because this was like when, you know, streaming and YouTube was
just starting.
So I remember reading a bunch of comments and a lot of them were making fun of my vest and then not knowing some of the bands you were talking about. And I was like, God damn it.
Yeah.
The internet
sucks. Yeah. And also, like, it would have been nice if someone prepped me on what I was doing. We were notorious for like not telling. People would show up and they're like, I thought it was a podcast.
Yeah.
They're like, oh no, it's live. And I remember Dom Herrera showed up in shorts. And he was like, and he was on, and this is a great thing. Dom Herrera, you know, legend comedian in shorts with Jim Lindbergh from Pennywise.
Oh my
And this is how great, and just the two of them talking. Yeah. And like, and I remember like, it was just great.
But I met you at the factory and I was like, factory. And you were real nice and real gung-ho and definitely real so eager. Gung-ho. And so, and I remember thinking like, yeah, but anybody who's starting out, it's like, hey man, like, go for it. Like, you will know if it's not for you, and also the world will tell you if it's not for you based on you not putting in the work.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You'll just figure it out. Like, you figure out with the formula. People, I'm sure, that ask all of us, like, you know, oh, what? How can I do this? Or how can I jump this hoop or whatever? And you're like, You got to be willing just to do it all. And what? And also, you know, sometimes according, obviously being a dad and having other responsibilities, but finding ways around then to, I heard Rogan telling a comic in the parking lot one night who was a dad, and he was like, man, I just don't do sets, whatever. He's like, I'm a dad. And Rogan goes, I'm a dad. He goes, put my kids to bed at 8:30 and I go to my spots, yeah, 3, 4, mm-hmm. and then I come back and blah, 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 and I do all my, so he's like, there's a way to figure it out.
The whole time that, you know, everything you're saying, it's funny because it's not funny, but that's such a cliche thing to say. But, you know, especially being on tour with Brewer and watching him, it's he, you know, every night he crushes so hard. And he does these things where, like, you know, he'll come up on stage and just when I thought, like, I saw, you know, I've seen the bit enough, he'll mm-hmm. totally do it differently, or he'll open up with something where I'm like, I was with you all day. Like, right. when did you even think of that? You know, or he'll close with, like, something.
I wasn't listening to anything you were saying, Joe, when you were talking to me at the coffee shop. Yeah, exactly. I was writing a bit in my head.
I remember one night we did some show and like, it was at, it, I forgot where it was, but these people, you know, we're all hanging out, we're watching Brewer, and they go up. He's going into this bit, and I remember he was doing an old bit that, and you know, I'd never heard it before, and he was doing it, but he was doing it so new that I was telling these people, I'm like, fuck, dude, this is fucking brand new. You're fucking witnessing, yeah. and we're all watching it, and the people had never heard it either. And then after the show, I was like, oh my God, dude, that fucking, the last 30 minutes. And he's looking at me, and I'm like, dude, and you know, at this point I've been on the road with him for almost 2 years, a year and a half. And he goes, oh no, man, no, that's something. Gosh, I haven't done that. And I was just like, right there, I go, oh man, it's like a being in a band. You did, like, oh, that was off an EP I released.
Yeah,
or, you know, like, oh yeah,
that was much material.
Yeah. And you're like, I remember featuring once for Eric Griffin.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe what do you mean you did 5 shows with 5 different, 5, like, yeah, like 85% of different material?
Wow.
And he just, you know, he was like, Joe, it's because I've been doing it for, you know, 2015, whatever, you know, like, sure. I haven't been doing it for 3 years, bro. And I remember the thing that was the hardest thing for me was that I remember Rita at the improv one night, like, I got up there and I thought I had a really good set.
Manager of the improv, Rita.
And she's been around forever.
Yep.
Sweetest woman, but worked with, you know, everybody. Mm-hmm. And you know, she's like, Joey, I really liked your set tonight, but where's the crazy? And I'm like, what? And I remember, she's like, where's the crazy? And I'm like, and in my head, I'm like, okay. And like, and you know this by doing comedy, both of you guys, people will say things to you and you don't know what they mean. And she also said that night, I was like, eh, da, da. And she goes, Joe, you know what? Just enjoy the journey. And I was like, what does she mean by that? So that night I left, and all that I thought about for months and would be like crazy. And like, there would be nights where I'm like, oh, this is what she means by crazy. Like, I'm going to come in from over here and I'm going to rip over these. I'm going to knock over the tables. That's crazy. Jesus, and I'm like, no, that's not it. And then I was like, okay, oh, I know what she means. Crazy. I'll pour this water on this person's head. Okay. That's okay. Now I can't work this club. Okay. I've been asked, you know, but then what I realized was when she was saying crazy, she was saying, hey, don't be so scripted, man. Like, let it naturally go through your mind, to your heart, to your fingertips, to the mic. Like, let that happen. But I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And that also only came from me finally letting myself go and say, you know what? I know what she means by enjoy the journey. It's don't get kicked out of this too, bro. Don't be so serious that you don't make it fun. Don't. It's just, Joe, just get all that you want to do is be good at it so that you can sit down at maybe coffee with all the other comics and eat your sandwich with them, and they don't say, dude, you're not a comic, bail. That's all I wanted, was just to be accepted as a comedian.
Yep.
And if that, it's like Jerry Seinfeld says, isn't that enough? Like, you know, when he says, can't we be comics and that's enough?
Yeah.
And I remember I didn't understand that then, but now I'm like, that's enough. Right. I want to be able to do a set with people that I admire and not stink up the room and have people, you know, have someone say something like, whoa, you know, that dude, I enjoyed that.
Yeah. That's funny.
And now we can have a drink afterwards and they go and do their Comedy Central special on Netflix and I'll go and do my thing at the next room. And that to me took me, I'm, you know, this is the beginning of my 10th year, 10 years to understand, and now I get it. And I can tell you right now, if you're going to be a comic, I hate to say it, but the difference between being a musician and a comic, musician you can turn off. If you truly want to be a comic, you cannot turn it off. And it seriously will fuck with relationships with your family, your kids, everyone. It's like Rogan says, you have to turn it on and you have to turn it off when you're around those people. Like, I remember our family therapist said, Joe, when you drop in, you know, on stage, you're in the moment, right? And I go, yeah. She said, just do that with your family. You know, like and there's times where I have to literally go, no phone, no jokes.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm a dad.
Yeah.
But just like Rogan says, they go to bed. Karen, I look at Karen, she says, go time. Okay, I'm a comic now. I go, I do my thing.
Wow.
But you have to do that. When you're a musician, it's a lot, just in my opinion,
yeah,
that creative, it doesn't gnaw at you, at least it didn't with me. And I wrote a lot of material, I wrote a lot of songs. Comedy gnaws at me. Like, it's always
it's tough to turn it off.
It's so tough.
Because you're never done. You could always write a new bit.
You're right.
Oh, I wake up in the middle of the night just writing shit. Like, it's a blessing and a curse. Like,
you could be done with an album. It's like, okay, I finished my album.
You go perform that song, like California, people didn't go, oh, dude, I love when you change the lyrics. But if you do a new bit and you go, you have a whole new bit and you change it all around, people are like, oh, my God. Yeah, like, the best feeling in the world is when you get done. And you go, in your head, you're like, God, I did a lot of stuff I did last time when I played here. And then I love when the audience go, oh my God, I love, all this stuff was so new. And you're like, yeah, I mean, then you're close with that last thing, but it was different.
You have to take a step back and go, right, I'm with my act every day. They're with it maybe 2 days out of the year.
Yeah.
So they're not in with it as much as I'm, like, you are your own worst critic, which is good. Because then that's going to make you better. But at the same time, you have to realize, oh, yeah, but my fans aren't obsessing over my act and with it every day. The same way that you are.
Yeah,
exactly.
Your show is your partner, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, I remember someone said something. My partner at Side One, he said something that was so true, that there was this actor that was on, like, I think it was on Stern or something. I forgot the guy's name. I think it's Josh Brolin.
Sure.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's him. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong.
He's Thanos.
So, someone said to him, like, he had been in a role in a movie, and like, it was early in his career, and he wasn't that proud of it, but people love it. I don't know what movie it is. And people would come up to him after, and when they'd see him out, and they'd go, oh my God, I love you. And he'd be like, oh dude, that was, you know, I really wasn't. And he realized they didn't have that relationship with that. They loved it. So him saying he didn't like it, it ruined it for them.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's the same way with stand-up. Like, you might think, you know, oh my God, I didn't hit it tonight. But when someone, oh my God, Adam, I love this, or this was so great. You know, Brad, I love it. It's different for the person watching it.
Yeah.
Yes. Opposed to you.
That takes a minute to grasp that too.
Oh my God.
I don't know if I gave you any advice when I met you at the factory, but I'll give you advice now. More Dick Van Dyke jokes.
and also just thanks for being, like, you're not trying to be someone you're not on stage.
Ah,
you are. You are exactly who you are, which I love and appreciate.
Thank you.
You don't. It's not a character. It's not an act. It's you.
Probably a benefit of starting a little late, right? Where you're like, I know who Joe Sib is, so I can just take that on stage. And now it's just about writing and finding the.
I still had the.
Yeah.
I still had to figure it out. You know. You know.
Did I give you any advice at the factory?
No, you were all. You know what it was?
Was I just nice to you?
No, you know what it was? You were always.
Because I was nice to Vinny from Jersey Shore, the Laugh Factory.
No,
but that's also me. You have, like, good hair, so you probably just sat there like, yeah, like, what products are you using?
What it was with you, Adam, was, like, you know what it was? It was the same thing that, like, Chris had from Foos. You know, it was like, you just, like, not that there's people there that, like, aren't cool, you know, but, like, there's some people that are very, like, welcoming, and then there's some people that are, like, kind of that middle of, like, hey, bro, not now, maybe later.
Sure.
You were definitely like, hey, bro, right now. Like, we're going to be bros, and you can talk to me, and I can ask you questions. And it was also, like, it was at a time when the Laugh Factory was coming back, so, like, you remember Chappelle was there.
Yeah.
Dane had just come back.
Oh, yeah.
And there was these monster shows, and I remember, like, we would sit there and watch Chappelle. I remember, were you there that night when we all sat there when Chappelle went to, like, 2:30 in the morning?
I was not there, but I remember hearing about
that.
Yeah, but I was at the Dane one where he, I think, went
six
or something.
Yeah. But the thing that you were always super cool with was just being someone that, you know, would say, like, if I said, you know, I could ask you, like, what do you think about that? Hey, dude, it's getting good. You know, you just got to work on this. Just keep getting up. You know, just being honest.
Yeah, and that's and you pay that forward.
You got to.
And now you're gonna have a chance to do that to the next group of comics coming.
I hope, man. I hope. There's a lot of great ones, man. I'll tell you that right now, man. Like, dude, you go out, you see these people hitting it now, man. They get good quick.
Yeah. Well, if people want to hear you hitting it, I think that's how the kids say that. Your stand-up album is called Nowhere Near the Top. And that is available iTunes on your website.
Yeah, you can stream it on Spotify. You can check it out there. And then, and if you wanna, if there's anything, I always like to tell people, hit me up on Instagram. But also, you can just email me, joesib22@gmail.com. Hit me up, and then
send them all your complaints about wax. Just say like, yeah, I was more of a social defense myself. Yeah.
Hey, if you're gonna be out, I don't know if you'll have it up by we're out on the Metallica tour
on Monday. Yeah.
On the Metallica, all the dates for Metallica they're up on my website, so you can go to joesib.com. And then plus, Brewer and I are doing a bunch of shows, just him headlining, featuring. And then there'll be some dates on there where I'm headlining in different places. And come out to a show, man. And I always love meeting people that you get to meet through doing a podcast and different, it's always a cool experience. Like, hey, man, I heard you on this. I'm here in real life. I love that.
And you want them to bring their kids so that they can be friends with your kids so they can set up.
Bring
the kids to
the show.
Bring
your kids.
No.
Yeah, bring the kids.
Because you're looking to make new dude friends.
And Joe,
especially if you're a parent. You know?
Joe loves stories about how like you painted the fence the wrong color and then your wife got mad at you. Oh, he loves those stories.
So Zachary's turning 10.
Yeah, so you can just tell him all about the kid party stories and all that.
He's lactose intolerant. There's no peanuts here, right? Oh my God. He's a genius. Well, your genius didn't flush the toilet.
Good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamay Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.